The History of the Leech Lake Reservation with Elaine Fleming. This program is supported by funds from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Bushu and in a way, Makani Duk, Beshiku Benesi Akwe in Diko Mang and Dudem, Elaine Fleming and Dishina Kaz, Ga Oza Squajime Kag and Dunjaba, Ga Mesqua Wako Kag in Da, Migrate Minno Bimadisu and Migrate Nin Menwain Dum. I'm grateful for this good life. And, The last two shows, I've been talking a little bit about the troubles in Cass Lake and on the Leech Lake Reservation, and particularly with our youth and with our families. I've also been talking about community action. And so I want to return because this all comes to me because of a chapter that I read in Res Life by David Troyer about Leech Lake. And in it, he talks about those troubles that begin to occur in the 1960s with the HUD housing and the growing problem with drinking and drugs, gangs and violence, the deaths of many of our people, like Warren Tibbetts, a man who was lived on Track 34 and who was so well known for his sweat lodge, and all the good things, the good ceremonies that they would hold over there in their housing, he and his wife, Nancy Kingbird. Also about a couple of our young women, Heather Casey and Feather and Faye Manel, excuse me, the deaths of Louis Bisson and also Michael Littlewolf. We remember them. And we remember them because we loved them. And we also remember them because when you look at the past and the hard things that happened to us, then we learn from them so that we don't repeat those actions. And so when Mr. Troyer writes about Res Life on Track 33 and 34, he goes back into the past and he talks about the older times and how we behave towards our children. But before he does that, he gives us some statistics about Anishinaabe children in Minnesota. He writes that Anishinaabe children in Minnesota are 1.5% of the population that is under 18 years old, and that is about 20,000 children, about 20,000 Anishinaabe children in Minnesota under the age of 18. And he says, but of the 10,000 cases of overall child mistreatment, 7% involved Anishinaabe children. Another way of looking at that is that 1 in 24 children are in the system. 1 in 24 of our children are in the system, the court system and foster homes, etc. And it may not sound like a lot, Mr. Troyer writes, 1 in 24 children, but when you compare that to white children and the fact that only 1 in 206 of them will be in the system, it gives you a new way of thinking about why is it that we have such a small population of Anishinaabe people in this state, in this country, but we have such huge problems. And so Mr. Troyer, he starts to look at older times, and I do that too. because I am so fond of history and learning of history, although it can be a very hurtful thing. Mr. Troyer writes about the closeness between parents and children in the past. And he said that long ago that our parents, they never hit our children or yelled at them either, but they would use fear to control them. And one of the examples that he gives was about the ghost leg. If the children were misbehaving, they would have an old moccasin that they would stuff with straw or grass. It would be attached to a stick. And when the parent in the wigwam would call for that ghost leg, and some elder on the outside would push that ghost leg into that wigwam, and it would quiet the children. One of the other things many of us remember about getting our children to behave and to listen to us is at night we would talk about the owl and about that owl. If you don't listen, that owl is going to come to get you and take you away. And my I asked my mother about that, and my mother said, yep, her dad, Jim Droulard, from Grand Portage, that he used to talk about that to her and to her brothers and sisters and warn them about that owl coming to take them away. And I've been told that that whole teaching originates from another time when that owl, the snowy white owl, represented something very sacred about love and families, and about taking care of our children and loving them with all our hearts. And so, but those are a couple examples about how fear was used to control the children. And one of the biggest things that split families apart was during the assimilation era. And during that time, We had the federal government came to understand that it was too expensive to wage war against us, and that our populations were no longer dwindling, going down in number, but in fact we were increasing in number. And so there's a very famous man, Lieutenant I can't even remember his name. Must not have been that famous, huh? Anyway, he came up with this thought that, you know, to save the Indian, to save the man, you had to kill the Indian in them. And in order to do that, they would create boarding schools, and they would take the children away from the families and then put them into these boarding schools, so that they could educate them to become good citizens. Another example of things that separated the families were in the later years, like in the 40s and 50s, and when the social workers and the nurses became very involved in and disruptive in family life, because they would come in and they would make their judgments, and they would remove the children from the homes and from the reservation. And it became such a problem that that the federal government became concerned, and the Indian Child Welfare Act was created to protect our peoples and our children. I wanted to share a story about long ago, and about things that happened in the boarding school, and also some other stories. And I will do that in my next session when I talk about the breakup of the family and past practices. And then today is a good day. Chi mi kwech bisandawa yeg, meet you.
Yeah, eh, ha, hey, ah, ha, hey, ah, yeah, eh, ha.